Welcome to Spaghetti Launchers, a world-building podcast where we throw spaghetti at the wall and it is up to you what sticks. I'm Kyle.
I'm Ethan. On today's episode, we will be discussing rites and rituals, those ceremonies, behaviors, acts, and, well, rituals, really, that are designed to have religious or magical significance.
This is going to be a D20 episode, a little improv-y. We will be rolling for our noodles. We do not have them already. As we've done in the past, we'll roll a D20 on a chart and determine the rite and ritual we're going to each come up with, because there's so many different types of rites and rituals, and it's hard to pin them down to it, because you can make it out of literally fucking anything.
It could be anything from I was inspired by the Rite of Thorns from Baldur's Gate 3, where, you know, they were praying to the, in Act 1, to the statue of Sylvanas to create the wall of thorns around the grove. I was like, that's cool. That's a cool ritual, achieving a magical outcome. Or it could also just be something you do, like, on Hanukkah. We light Hanukkah candles. That is a ritual thing that we do. It is meant to bring us back to a different time or place. So it could be a magical effect, a religious effect, a holiday, whatever you want it to be.
Yeah, like
it is a behavior or a practice meant to, and I'm putting my religion hat on here just for one second, it is a behavior or practice meant to either achieve some effect on the world, impose your will on the world, or take you back to a historically or religiously significant space. And so in fantasy, you often see it as imposing will on world by use of a magical ritual.
Yeah. In the Aztec world, they did human sacrifice because their cosmology belief was that the world ran on blood.
Right.
And if there wasn't more blood being provided, that the world would stop.
Exactly.
So you had to provide sacrifices to ensure that the world didn't, you know, completely come to a halt. And it's... you know, you're having a desired effect on the world, but trying to prevent a desired effect against you, which is often what religious principles or practices are, is like prevent a thing or keep a thing going, versus like, you know, warping the world to your will, which like rituals from like wizards and shit are usually doing. It's like, I'm going to create a new thing. I will do something. I will impose my will on the world.
Right. It's function, like grammatically, they're different things. In spec fic, they're used pretty interchangeably.
Yeah. So, all right, we can go ahead and jump right in. So
we're gonna do that.
You roll the d20 for yourself.
For myself.
You're gonna start. All right, but unless you want me to start.
No. I'll start, but you're gonna have to read. I'm not gonna read my own thing. You got to keep me honest here.
Yeah, roll it.
11.
Life? Is that just life?
So that would be the ritual of life.
All right. Well, then yours is the ritual of life.
Oh, that's just fucking.
Yeah.
I'm gonna roll again.
Yeah. Yeah, that one might be a little too easy.
19.
The ritual or rite of scouting. Scout.
Ooh, from the Scout Rogue.
These are all based on D&D classes. It's a good, I mean, as you've probably heard in previous episodes like this, where this is just where we draw good little fantasy buzzwords.
Just starting off points. The rite of scouting, I think a lot of people would hear and not necessarily incorrectly interpret as being related to hunting. You know, it is not that strange of an idea to have a group of hunters pray for good luck before they go out on a hunt, right? And pray for creatures to be nearby and easy to kill so that they can take them back and you know, achieve their goal and feed their families and their communities. The rite of scouting might be useful for that, but I think in this case, this is more of a ritual that is designed not necessarily just for hunting game or hunting, you know, in the Greek mythological sense, because you're not hunting explicitly for life or people. You're hunting for information. The rite of the scout is a ritual that is supposed to bring to you not just enhanced senses, let me hear like the eagle, you know, I have the eyes of a hawk and the ears of a fox, like Gimli said. It's not about the physical hunting. This is more about how can I gain intuition into other people and their behaviors so that I can better understand what they're doing and where threats are coming from politically. It's not the right of the scout just in terms of I'm standing atop a watchtower and I need good vision. This is about how can I understand game theory? How can I, you know, sort of get into a more Machiavellian headspace and understand other human beings so that I can scout ahead amongst other peoples and situations to really make sure that I understand what exactly they are doing so that I can better predict their goals and outcomes and protect myself. I think from a practical perspective, the rite or the ritual would be you are sat in a room and you are surrounded by a group of people that each sit stoically in front of you, and you have to read them correctly. You have to say you are a wife, you are a husband, you are a baker, you have to be able to intuit information about them just by reading them as they sit there quietly and stoically. This is a little bit inspired by the fact that when I was in Salem recently, I went to a tarot card reader. It was a very fun experience. Seem vexed.
No, I was just keeping up with it. Yeah, you're just defining a scout still.
I see what you're saying. Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, you're still within the realm of what scouts do. Scouts are also military people.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But then, yeah, it's the taking scouting to mean not physically scouting to like mentally scouting.
Yeah.
It's like,
it's your ability to read people
and get insight into scouting, an entire army's intentions by scouting people's intentions. I'm confused as to, I guess, like you do the ritual by sitting in a room and like reading people. Then what do you gain?
You
learn, you know, you're able to then like through that, get like some sort of like third eye vision of whoever you're thinking about, like whoever your target is, to learn what
it's more you gain the ability to, if you are able to read these people who are sitting there giving you no information, that is confirmation of your ability to read people, which then does open up your senses and your ability to almost divine other people's behaviors and intentions just by reading their body language.
Okay, so you can't do this from afar. You still have to be like, so like you would.
You need, still have to be. This is like something James Bond would do before going into a party.
Yeah, or it'd be something that you would. Yeah, it's like you give it to a spy.
Right.
So the rite of scouting is a thing that you would do for your spies, then send them to the neighboring kingdoms and have them report back anything that they are able to discern.
Yes, correct.
Is it like in D&D terms that their insight skill is now like plus 10 or is it, I literally have divine magic, their divination magic?
It's more your insight skill is plus 10.
Yeah. Okay.
It's more that I'm thinking smaller scale. In the Dune books, for example, the voice was never meant to be this magical voice that, you know, you trigger some harmonic thing. It was more about your ability to read people and frame things in such a way so that they would be much more likely to do what you say.
Yeah, it's manipulation.
It's pure manipulation.
And scouting doesn't give you the tools to manipulate. It just gives you the information.
Correct.
It gives you a boost to getting the information that would enable you to manipulate better because you now know more.
Right.
But you still have to figure out what to do with the information. And it would be a thing that you could do it without being a spy. You could do it as just a, you know, you could do it if you're a judge.
Absolutely.
You could do it if you're a mother with mischievous kids.
If you're a business leader.
If you're the king who wants to trust people.
Before they go to court.
Yeah. Or people who are at their court. It is, I would think that it could also work as a, you can maybe do multiple times as this like, less as a rite, more as a ritual, because this is the definition that I'm using. It's like the ritual would be kind of like the a refresher, and it would be like you would do the ritual again to like bolster your senses and really clear your head of influence and say I'm looking for the truth. I am going to see through the people in my life. It's like the king would do it
right.
The ritual like yearly to ensure that he's not corruptible and that he hasn't been led astray by bad advisors.
Right.
Something like that.
Yeah, very much something like that. Because I think scouting often focuses on your ability to see things at a far distance, right? This is more about how do you recognize if the thing you're seeing is actually a threat?
Hmm. Yeah. What is seeing the things that are... Like a scout is looking at large movements.
Mm-hmm.
It's looking at things that are already in motion,
mm-hmm.
in full. This is looking to see things that are being set in motion.
Mm-hmm.
It is the potential energy as opposed to
what's already happened,
as opposed to like true kinetic energy.
Right.
It's the different stage of a thing.
Correct.
Yeah. I think it's cool.
So that's the ritual, the rite of scouting, the ritual of the scout.
Yeah.
Rite of the scout, ritual of scouting.
Also, just like mechanically, if you take things like that and apply them in a D&D game and you make those in multiple versions of those types of things and tell your players, if you earn this thing, you can get a plus 10 to your skill,
mm-hmm.
Which like if you're not a rogue or a bard is pretty cool.
Yeah.
And only in certain instances where you've like proven yourself. And that's like a cool mechanical reward that might be broken in the long run, but would be so satisfying.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And a good way to reward good role, like you, yeah. It would be very simple to exercise and just say you have these five people in front of you, make five straight d20 rolls.
Well, I think you could probably make an insight check in this case.
You could do that, but that's all you're doing. That is the ritual. It's quick, it's fast, and then if you succeed,
like you could make it a bigger thing too if you wanted to.
If you wanted to, but you could also make it that simple.
Yeah. Yeah, cool.
Ritual of the scout.
All right, let me roll. All right. 17.
Kyle, tell me about the ritual of the crown.
I'm trying to think if there's a way to do this without being just directly related to a monarch. And I think it's kind of hard. So I'm just going to keep it related to a monarch.
Yeah.
You know, it seems obvious. So let's just go with it. This sounds somewhat similar to my idea when we did our succession episode.
Mm.
The rite of the crown is that every new monarch has to make a new crown.
Ooh, I love that.
There is no singular crown. Or like there's a crown per monarch, and each time that a new monarch comes in, they break down the old one into its component parts.
I love it.
And you take one piece of every crown of every monarch that's come before you. A single piece, so that they have all the component parts of all of the previous crowns.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it could be a gem, it could be just a tiny piece of scrap metal, it could be a bone, it can be whatever. You have to take a different part of each of those crowns that's come before you.
Yeah.
And you have to go acquire new pieces by doing something brave, courageous, brilliant, whatever it is. You could go to war and, you know, steal the crown of an enemy. You could have a duel and take it and win and take that sword and then make that into your crown. You could, climb the top of the mountain and take the stone from up there.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever it is, you have to do a great feat to earn your right to be that monarch and to solidify that you've been chosen for a reason, and then use whatever the byproduct is of that feat, plus all of the component parts of the previous crowns, or one from each of the previous crowns, and then make the new crown in a grand public ritual as your coronation, as a part of your coronation.
I have no notes on that. I think that is about as clean and elegant an idea as we've had on this show, and its beauty is in its simplicity.
Yeah.
I remember in the show The Dragon Prince on Netflix, which has since gone off the rails.
Yeah.
But there was a very cool moment when the younger son, Ezrin, made his crown out of his executed father, King Harrow's sword.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, that's beautiful.
Yeah.
And this gets at that.
Perfectly.
Perfectly. Yeah. It is a perfect ritual for a king too, because number one, it means that you have to show competence.
Yeah.
It's a perfect ritual for a coronation because, number one, it means you have to show competence. Number two, have to learn skill and to get through it.
You have to respect history.
You have to respect history, but also make history your own.
Yeah. I think the only other thing that I would add in there just is that you could have an interesting situation where a monarch that's coming up isn't competent and needs to find a way around that, and they need to like fabricate a feat of some kind, and you can create an interesting story moment of new monarchs coming in. They actually, like, they've said that they're going to you know, have this duel, and that, like, much like you know, in Gladiator, he's going to stack the deck by poisoning the guy, you know, something like that.
Yeah.
And then creating a potential controversy of the, like, you know, like conspiracy, people finding out about it, words getting out, and now it's, you know, there's like a civil war, people are trying, not civil war, but there's civil unrest, and people are trying to take down the king, and then you have a rebellion, and all because it's the king didn't follow the right of the crown properly. The king is thus a is not a legitimate king.
Or even if they did do it properly, if they didn't appear, if it didn't appear to have been done properly. Like, let's say, for example, you are in a line of succession, and all of you, all of the historical rulers behind you had been these big brutes, right? Like the mountain from Game of Thrones. And then you come in and you are wiry and nimble and agile, and you win, just like the Viper versus the Mountain in Game of Thrones. And you win by keeping at reach. You play smart, but you are not as physically strong. Let's say you win.
Yeah.
But the people are like, well, wait, that was sneaky. That, I don't like that. You didn't beat them in a fair fight. You tricked them, right? Like, you, that's how you won. You didn't prove your strength.
Yeah.
Even though you won, it didn't feel right to me. So maybe you're not legitimate, actually, right? It's public buy-in around is the source of power.
Yeah. And you have to... Yeah, your feat has to be, it's unquestionable that you did a feat in the way that people like and
will recognize.
And then the narrative is correct.
Yeah.
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 But anyway.
So no, I think it's a great storytelling element. Mine was more mechanical. I think yours is a great storytelling.
Yeah. All right. Let's do a quick little frozen lasagna D20 roll here, baby. Ding. That's a 17 again. I'm going to roll that. 7. FYI, whatever. Because this is frozen lasagna and a D20, we're just going to say the first idea that we have that comes to our mind. We aren't going to deliberate for even a second.
Tell me about the Ritual of Wild Magic, Kyle.
The Ritual of Wild Magic. You don't know what it's going to be. You just walk into a room and shit just starts happening. It's it is unexplained. It is an ancient chamber. There's just... like a magical essence to it, but you pass through it as like a way of becoming a wizard. So you go through there and you don't know what kind of magic you're going to experience, but you're going to experience every different variety that exists to learn what magic can be, and both good and bad. So you come out with you come out with a greater understanding of what magic is.
I love that. I thought you were going to go, it's a test of skill and you have to dispel whatever's happening to you. This is much better.
Yep.
Well done. I love that.
Ding.
The Ritual of the Blight is a dark ritual. It is one that is seen as not a... I don't like rituals that are meant to be... that are called dark and forbidden. I don't like that. I see them more as rituals that are necessary, but no one likes having to do. In this society... we're going back to Arborea for this one. The Ritual of the Blight is when a tree has grown so large that it has begun to eclipse and grow into other trees. So you have to cull it down. And so the Ritual of the Blight is one where you come and you cause the tree to become blighted and rot and die away to feed other trees.
Ding. All right. Time's up. I like that. It's pretty good. It's forest fire.
Yeah. Wildfire, but death and rot, not fire.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, cool. What stuck for you?
I loved the point about understanding the boundaries of magic, that is the Ritual of Wild Magic is about the wild, understanding the wildness of magic, not about your skill, not about anything, just understanding the potential of it and enduring the wholeness of it as a skill, I think is that massively stuck for me.
Okay, cool. I'll take it.
What about you? What stuck for you?
I think my right of the crown is a perfect idea.
Yeah.
I don't like you said, it's like, it's one of the tighter ideas we've ever had.
It's just,
and I think,
and there's no ego. Like, it just is. Like, it's, this is perfect.
It is a perfect perfect bowl of pasta. And I think what I really love about it is that I think it adds character to a monarchy that is often lacking, because monarchies feel quite samey in every instance of just kind of a regurgitation of the typical European style monarch.
Yeah.
And I like just throwing a little bit of a curveball on that. And the visuals of it are really poignant to me. I love the idea that there is, you know, an archive room in the keep, which is all of the crowns of the past. And when you're 100 monarchs deep, and this room is getting bigger, and the history is getting more and more forgotten, and there's people's names are being forgotten. You don't know which king this was, but it was one of them. From a long time ago, and you know, like, some of the pieces are getting mixed together, and I think
they're rusted and they're falling apart, like a rare book room where you have to be very the environment has to be controlled, and you have to wear gloves,
and you've got like a crown that is a hodgepodge. It isn't all that pretty because it has like rusted pieces of metal from a long time ago, and it has, you know, like a bone that's starting to, like, you know, like it's been chipped a little bit. I think you get some interesting stuff in character that I really love.
It's a great visual for carrying. You know, we always say the weight of the world is on your shoulders, or heavy lies the crown. It's a great visual of that. It's like you have the entirety of the history of the responsibility of this land. Yeah.
Yeah. This dynasty is
on your head,
and you are being reminded of it. And then you don't take it lightly. I think you also create a slightly better class of monarchs in that case.
Yeah.
Presumably, but, like, you know, power, right. Power is power.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's what stuck for us. Let us know what stuck for you. Email's in the show notes.
Thanks for listening. 17 again. Goodbye.
The Zac Efron movie?